You're listening to Mr. Radio, and I'm your host, Marshall. The Mad River Valley includes Duxbury, Fayston, Moortown, Waitsfield, and Warren, Vermont, as well as the Sugarbush Resort and Mad River Glen Resort, and today's guest has played a major role in their development. My guest has received numerous awards for his work, including the Vermont Ski Areas Association Lifetime Achievement Award in recognition of his leadership and contribution to the Vermont ski industry, the National Ski Areas Association Sales and Marketing Award, recognizing Mad River Glen's use of social media to promote skiing, the North American Snow Sports Journalists Association's Bob Gillen Award for Achievement in Snow Sports Public Relations and Communications, the National Ski Areas Association Sales and Marketing Award, which recognized the Mad River Glen's Kids Free Pass program, and he was recognized as the Mad River Valley Rotary Club's Person of the Year. Currently the Executive Director of the Mad River Valley Chamber of Commerce in Waitsfield, Vermont, it is my pleasure to introduce Eric Friedman. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thanks, Marshall. Great to be here.
Let's see where I want to start. Take it from all of the awards that you've received that you have a passion for skiing. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I've been skiing since I was 2 years old, growing up in New Jersey. I didn't realize until much later on in life that not every kid from New Jersey skied 4 days a week. But I did when I was a little kid, and have an intense passion for it. And it's kind of directed me in my life.
Did your parents ski?
My father was a very avid skier, and my grandfather was as well, which is pretty uncommon for Jewish people from Newark. But it's my father was a volunteer ski patrolman, and for many years. And like I said, I was brought up skiing every single weekend, and going up and racing on Tuesday and Thursday nights in New Jersey, and I started being on the racing team when I was 6-7 years old.
Well, that answers my next question. I was going to say, do you do cross-country skiing? But it seems like you do competitive skiing, or do you do both?
No, I did competitive skiing all the way through high school. I now cross-country ski and backcountry ski quite a bit because we can go right out my door here in Vermont and do that. But I am a decidedly alpine skier.
What role does the ski industry take in the Mad River Valley? Is the economy dependent on the ski industry?
You know, it's interesting knowing the history of it. This was a very depressed area, very much a rural farming community before the advent of the ski industry in the late 40s and early 50s. And as the ski industry grew, the Mad River Valley, as well as all of the other ski-related communities in Vermont and throughout New England, became more and more dependent upon it. It's absolutely an important part of it. I'm really glad to say that while the winter time, it's still very, very important and it drives the economy locally, we're a much more diverse community economically today than we were, you know, even 20 or 30 years ago. So the summer business here is every bit as good as it is in the winter, a little bit different people, different demographics, but we're much more well-rounded economically.
Since you did start skiing when you were a little kid, and all of the events that you've taken part in, you're obviously a very knowledgeable skier. My skiing history verges on the novice. I started on wooden skis with bear trap clamps, and I really never moved up to today's technology. But
yep.
You've been involved in several skiing endeavors, including, and I don't know if this still is taking place, but the Alpine Zone Ski Area Challenge. Is that still in existence?
Alpine. That's funny that you found that. The Alpine Zone is one of the older online ski communities, and I've participated reluctantly over the years with it. It's amazing how much the online community has, how important it is to the ski industry and how it's really changed the ski industry in a lot of ways.
What was your role, or is your role in that? Do you answer questions? What do you do there?
I was just on it as a member of that ski community, and I did so more out of necessity than anything else. It's not something that I would say I enjoy, but it's really important, and as a way to communicate with the outer world of skiing, and it's very popular, and I think I took a very different approach to talking to those people as opposed to many of my colleagues in the ski industry. I think I've always had a very different take on promoting ski areas and promoting skiing than my colleagues had initially was kind of gratifying, is that you hang around long enough and you see things change. And I think the industry really gravitated to what I was doing, which was unusual at the time, but isn't today.
I said I started out with wooden skis, and I'm really a novice in the audiences that is listening to this show. As a matter of fact, I may know the term bunny slope or something. That's probably where I belong. But the Mad River Glen has been described as New England's telemark mecca. What, for the people, including myself, who don't know what telemark is, what is telemark?
Telemark skiing is kind of a throwback to the way skiing used to be. It's just different kind of equipment. It's a free heel, like a cross-country ski is, as you know, so you can lift your heel up. And you make a different kind of a turn, and it's what's called a telemark turn. And in the early days of skiing, early days of skiing, in the early 20th century, when skiing became a recreational sport as opposed to just transportation, that's what the skis were like. And with the advent of stiffer boots and heavier boots and bindings that were more secure, telemark skiing sort of went away. And then in the 1970s and 80s, it really started coming back in pockets. And it was something that was really a big thing at Mad River Glen, because a lot of those people enjoyed it because it was a good way of getting into the backcountry. By having a free heel, it's more like a cross-country ski, so you can go up with climbing skins. You can go up, and because of the nature of Mad River Glen's terrain, it was something that people were into. Interestingly, nowadays, over the last 10 years or so, telemarking has really gone away again because of the fact that alpine touring equipment has progressed to the point where you can have hard plastic boots and have a free heel that you can, in turn, when you get to the top, lock down. And there is a reason that, you know, skiing went the way that it did and went away from telemark, because, you know, having a fixed heel and having good, stiff plastic boots really made skiing a lot easier for people. So things keep changing.
Telemark is not a competitive sport.
It is. It's in a very esoteric way. There are people that do compete in telemark ski racing, but it's a pretty esoteric sport.
And are the skis different from cross-country skis?
They're wider. They're wider. They're more like a conventional alpine ski. Yeah, that's basically it. And, you know, people put skins on them so they can go uphill with them.
So the advantage would be that you could go up a hill easier with telemark than you could with cross-country skis?
Well, more as opposed to alpine. Cross-country skiing is more up and down, undulating kind of terrain. And what most people are doing now is they're going up a mountain for the purpose of skiing down it. Cross-country skis are not fun to go downhill on.
My experience with that, I was in cross-country skiing in Michigan, and we got off the trail somehow, and we ended up on a downhill ski slope way at the top. And I asked one of the skiers there, is this the cross-country trail? And he goes, oh, no, this is Big Chief Mountain, and I really didn't want to go down on that, although I had a neighbor who went downhill on cross-country skis, but that's another story.
Yes, it's certainly thrilling.
What geography does the Mad River Valley comprise?
Well, the Mad River Valley is pretty much dead center in the middle of the state. We're about 20 minutes west of the capital of Montpelier. We are, as the name suggests, it is a river valley. The Mad River runs from the mountains into the Winooski River, which lets out in Burlington area into Lake Champlain. The Mad River Valley encompasses the watershed in the towns that you mentioned. The river starts in way up high in the mountains of Warren and travels through Waitsfield and Moortown, and like I said, into the confluence with the Winooski River further downstream. And so the Mad River Valley, while most people think of it as Warren, Waitsfield, and Faiston, we also include Moortown because it is part of the watershed, and Duxbury nominally as well. But Moortown and Duxbury are kind of there's no town centers. There's not a lot of commerce going on in either one of those towns. So we're sort of the forgotten, and I live in Moortown, so we're sort of the forgotten towns sometimes. And I think that what's interesting and unique about the geography here is that we're all very much tied together by the river, and Waitsfield is our collective downtown. Warren has a small village, but Waitsfield is the commerce center of the valley. And so I think that while we have separate towns with separate schools, elementary schools, we are very much tied together by the river and bound by the mountains that form the valley. And we have a real good collective spirit and sense of community here, that it's not town by town, which is somewhat unique in Vermont. The Mad River Valley, for example, had the first multi-town planning district in the United States that started back in the 1970s. There's a collective sense of community that is unique.
Is this collective sense related to the Mad River Glen Cooperative?
No, I think that the Mad River Glen Cooperative in the ski area, I think, epitomizes that sense of community in many ways. I think that from someone that was very involved in Mad River Glen and for 24 years and was there from the day that the co-op started, I don't think it would have happened in a lot of other places. And I think that the sense of community that we have here and the closeness of it enabled the Mad River Glen Cooperative to succeed.
How exactly does the cooperative work? Because I'm only familiar with cooperatives in urban areas. So
they're not very different. They're not very different from a food co-op or an electrical co-op or an insurance cooperative or a real estate cooperative. It is a unique vehicle for a ski area. It's the only cooperatively owned non-for-profit ski area in the United States, created by the previous owner of the mountain because she wanted to create a vehicle to sell the ski area to the only people she felt she could trust not to mess it up. And those were the skiers themselves. So she created this idea. There were a couple of iterations of it before it came about. But Betsy Pratt, who was the former owner of Mad River and owned it for 25 odd years, really was a steward of the mountain and wanted to make sure that it didn't get messed up. So she sold it to the skiers themselves. Interestingly, in the mid-90s, it was a time when the consolidation of the ski industry was just beginning. Companies like the American Ski Company was the first big conglomerate of ski areas, and which is, you know, ubiquitous today. We were really flying in the face of everything that was going on. The American Ski Company actually owned Sugarbush, which was our neighboring ski area, which is just 3 or 4 miles down the road. The owner of American Ski Company famously offered Betsy Pratt a check for what was believed to be $5 million for the ski area. And Betsy was a classic, and she smoked a corncob pipe. I'm not making this up. And she took a big drag off of the pipe and blew the smoke in his face and told him exactly where he could stick his check. And she then proceeded to turn around the next year, sell the ski area to the skiers for $2.5 million, and she lent us the money with the 5-year interest-free note to sell the shares to do it. So she really wanted it to happen. The plan was to sell 2,000 shares of the cooperative at $1,500 a piece. And the idea of that would be that we'd raise $4 million, that she would get $2.5 million, and then we'd have $1.5 million worth of operating capital to keep the ski area up and running. We had to sell 1,667 shares to pay Betsy off, and she gave us 5 years to do it. And we sold it in 3, paid her off, and kept selling shares. And today we have, I believe it's about 2,300 shares sold to about 1,900 individual people. And it is truly a democracy and a very, very unique way to run a ski area, especially in this day and age.
You mentioned Sugarbush. You have two rival organizations, I believe, in your area, the Stowe Area Association and Revitalizing Waterbury. How do you work collaboratively with these organizations?
Well, it's a little bit different in that Sugarbush Resort is absolutely part of our community. Mad River Glen and Sugarbush are two ski areas that are very, very different and complement each other beautifully. Sugarbush is a corporately owned resort and has all of the amenities of a big resort, and Mad River is what Mad River is. You know, like I said, they complement one another beautifully. And you can actually, you know, hike from one over to the other only about a mile apart along the Long Trail, which is the end-to-end hiking trail in Vermont. And through, you know, I said about 3 or 4 miles drive from Mad River over to Mount Ellen area of Sugarbush. So we're tied at the hip. The ski areas are tied at the hip, and very much both of them very much tied to the local community. We are, as I mentioned earlier, directly in the dead center of the middle of the state. just north of us, if you drive north on fabled Route 100, you'll come to the town of Waterbury, which is famous for Ben & Jerry's ice cream and the Alchemist Brewery. And it's a great community there. And they're, you know, it's maybe 15 minutes drive from Waitsfield to Waterbury. And if you keep going north on Route 100 past Waterbury is the village of Stowe and Stowe Mountain Resort, which is up there, and the self-proclaimed ski capital of the East. So the region, that Route 100 corridor, which we like to refer to as the best of Route 100, is what we have in common is outdoor recreation. That's why people come to our region generally. That's why they go to Stowe, and that's why they go to Waterbury. That's why they go to the Mad River Valley. And we've recognized that, and our organizations work together to bring more people to our region, because when we bring more people to our region, all three areas benefit. And so many of our, you know, when we're at our visitor center here in the Mad River Valley, people come in and they're staying up in Stowe or they're staying in Waterbury. They drive down here. We send people up to Waterbury. We send people to Stowe, among other places in central Vermont. I think that's one of the great things about where we live is if you were right in the middle of the state and you can be in Burlington in 45 minutes. You can be in Montpelier and Barrie in 20 minutes, half hour. Stowe is just up the road, and there's lots to do and lots of different things to do, which is nice. So we like to try to work together to promote the whole region as well as the state generally.
I mentioned in my intro that in 2019, you became the executive director of the Mad River Valley Chamber of Commerce. And in your bio, you state that you had to reinvent this position over the past year and a half because of the pandemic. Could you explain some of the changes that needed to be made because of the pandemic?
It was a seminal moment for our community, just like it was for communities all around the country. Our ski areas, when the pandemic happened, and I remember it distinctly, it was March 17th of 2020. It was a great ski day, and it was, you know, towards the end of the ski season. And, you know, the ski areas closed the very next day, and they didn't reopen, which was very unusual. So the local hospitality industry really took it on the chin. You know, when the inns and lodges and restaurants had to close up, that's our bread and butter here. And for, you know, the business to just dry up literally overnight was a tough thing. I was hired by the Chamber of Commerce, and I took the position because of my marketing abilities and my abilities to be passionate about talking about our community and encouraging people to come here. And after 6 or 7 months of doing that, and the pandemic happens, I got thrust into this new role of being the cheerleader for our community, I got involved in lobbying efforts with the state and federal government. I got involved in being an advocate for our business community, as well as being a founding board and almost a counselor. You know, I have lived here a long time. Most all of the business owners, I knew them personally. I knew their kids. Our kids grew up together. Having to have conversations with these people, calling me up literally in tears over and over again with their businesses and their livelihoods being threatened, it really turned what the Chamber of Commerce was from being promoting our area to coming together to help save our business community. And it was a really gratifying thing to be involved in. And I am so proud of the fact that this community really pulled together like we always do. I think that, again, it epitomizes what this community is all about.
I just want to jump to a 2013 film that the Mount Mansfield Media Productions produced. They did a little mini documentary called Almost There.
Yep.
And for listeners who want to watch this, I will put a link to the film in the show notes. But it's got over 4,000 subscribers that are watching this thing and more than 50,000 views. Basically, it's an unscripted film about the community. The locals call Vermont's Mad River Valley, and they like to add that visitors come to the mountains, but they stay for the valley. Again, I will provide the link for the show. What was the motivation behind this film?
It was actually a production of the Chamber of Commerce. We hired, and I say we, I was on the, before I was the executive director, I was on the board of the chamber for 12 years in my capacity at Mad River Glen. So if anyone should have known not to take this job, it should have been me, but I decided to do it anyway. We wanted to do something really unique. We knew, you know, what we know about our community is that it is not a it's not a contrived place. It is very much a unique, organic kind of a place that has developed over many years with many layers to it. We didn't feel like you could promote it properly in a traditional way, and we wanted to tell the story of what this community is really all about. And I think Mansfield Media did a really, really nice job of articulating what is so special about the Mad River Valley and why it's unique. And I think that, you know, one of the things I always hear from, you know, from people that visit here is that it's so unlike any place else they ever come in the world, and that there's a deep sense of place to it. And the second that you get here, you realize, like, this is just not your typical place. It's not money-driven. People are here because it speaks to them for a number of different reasons. Sure, there are a lot of people that came here for the skiing and came to visit and ended up staying, but there's a lot of people that they had no interest in the skiing at all. And everyone is just tied to this community one way or another. And again, I think so much of it is because of that geography, and we go back to it. And it's the ties that bind us.
I picked a couple of clips from the movie that I'd like to play, and maybe we can comment on them. So let's see if we have a clip from Janice Hurley Hollis, and she's the director of operations for the Inn at Round Barn Farm. And she opens up with a rather shocking statement. Let's take a listen to it.
And I didn't realize what it meant to not have a stoplight until I was in the city. I was stopped at a stoplight for quite some time, and then I realized you lose a lot of your life sitting at stoplights, and that doesn't happen here because we don't have one. So you just live.
Is that true? You have no stoplights?
Yes. I couldn't help but laugh because we don't have a stoplight. And what was funny is, as I mentioned earlier, I live in Moortown, and after Tropical Storm Irene about a dozen years ago, the bridge got washed out, or part of it, and they had to put a light up because it only was open for one-way traffic. So they put a temporary light up, and the community freaked out over it. It was kind of funny. Like, oh, my God, now we have a stoplight, but it was temporary. And fortunately, it went away.
You also have Route 17. Does Route 17 play a role in the valley?
Route 17 is our escape valve west. Route 17 is also known as the McCullough Turnpike, and it was a dirt road that went up to Mad River Glen and ended at Mad River Glen in the late 40s, and then subsequently was paved and then went up over the top. It was actually a CCC project initially, and it went up over the mountain over what's called Appalachian Gap and down the backside into the town of Lincoln and out towards Burlington. So now it is a state highway, and it is the highest gap road in Vermont that's kept open year-round.
You also have a lot of family farmers in the film, including Sebastian von Trapp. And there's one guy, Donnie Jocelyn.
Yeah. You're going to make me cry, Marshall.
He was a farmer in the film that had perhaps the only negative view. Let's listen to what he had to say.
They all talk about the view, but you Jackson seem to make a pretty thin stew. You can't eat the view.
Now, in case you had trouble understanding what he said, it was, they all talk about the view, but deer tracks and scenery make a pretty thin stew. You can't eat the view. Why would he say that? Are farmers having a rough time making a living?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Donnie, and like I said, you're going to make me cry on this, because Donnie passed away in the last year. And he was a remarkable guy. He grew up in a very poor family that they worked really hard, and the Vermont Hill Farms were always a tough way to make a living. When he passed away in the last year, he was still living in a house without plumbing, with very limited electricity, and he had his farm. It was unarguably one of the most beautiful pieces of real estate in the entire state of Vermont, which is a pretty damn nice state. Yeah, people would always walk along on his road and say, oh my God, you're so lucky to live here. You have this view. It's incredible. But Donnie was a real true classic Vermonter. And I think it was a real hard scrabble existence for him growing up. But I think what was really interesting about him is that how the people that moved here, you know, Donnie was of someone, his family has been here since the late 1700s. And it was one of the original families that settled this town. He had a great deal of respect from the rest of the community here. You know, the skiers and the people that came later appreciated him and appreciated his farm and what he did there. That being said, farming is brutal. It's a tough way to make a living, especially dairy farming, which is what most of the farms around here are. What's really amazing about this community as opposed to some of the other quote-unquote tourist communities, and we certainly consider ourselves a touristy place at some level, but we're really proud of the fact that our farmers have really adapted. While there is a traditional dairy farm or two still around here, most of them are doing a lot of value-added products, you know, like Von Trapp Farm, where they are not only growing or raising dairy cows, but they are producing world-class cheese there and selling, you know, other products like, you know, they're raising beef, they're raising pork, they're raising local vegetables and local maple syrup and all of that. And the farms that are doing that here are being successful by changing their business models. And there's young farmers coming into the industry. And it's what's really valuable about that is not only is it great for us because we get wonderful local food and we don't have the supply chain issues that a lot of places have. The Mad River Valley has been the home was doing farm-to-table food long before it became cool. These farms are not only important because of their food production, but they're also important because they keep the land open and they keep the pastoral beauty of this area, which is why people come here to recreate. So it benefits us in many different ways and just adds so much texture to the fabric of our community.
We are unfortunately running out of time here, but I do have a quick, although it's probably not going to be a quick answer. You mentioned that you're a touristy destination. Is it being gentrified? And if so, how are you regulating that?
Just like so many rural communities around the country, the pandemic has rapidly increased the pace of people moving here. In some ways, that's great. We are the oldest state. We're the second oldest state in the country. Maine's older than us. So getting new families here is not necessarily a bad thing, but we have a tremendous housing crisis. Our people can't afford to stay here. Our children can't afford to stay here and live here, and there's limited job opportunities for them. So they feel the need to go away. Both of my kids who are 22 and 24 years old have moved away to go to school, and I don't think intend to come back anytime soon. It's tough. Our property values have increased dramatically, and this is something, you know, it concerns us. And it's just like it is in every other community like ours around Vermont and around New England and around the country. We're struggling with a lot of the same issues. But what I'm really proud of is the fact that I think the Mad River Valley will always look at things in a different way. And we will solve our problems in the Mad River way, just like Mad River Glen. Like, whoever would have thought that saving the ski area would the co-op? No one ever would have thought that. But it happened here because the idea came about. And I am sure that our community is going to be creative and be engaging and create a Mad River way out of our situation and make sure that this community is protected and preserved one way or another.
Eric, you know, I have another half hour's worth of questions, but I know we had agreed on a certain amount of time. So I'd like to close our show with the theme song from Almost There, which was written and sung by Susie Brown, a practicing cardiologist who's pursuing a career in singing her own songs and playing the guitar. And Eric Frieden, I'd like to talk to you again sometime. I'm happy that you were able to take the time to speak with me. And I hope to hear from you again real soon.
It was nice being with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, so near, but out of reach.
Listening to Mr. Radio.
and I'm your host, Marshall. This program was written and produced by Marshall. Our theme music was played by Ululation. Mr. Radio is available wherever you get your podcasts, including iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. And don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Mr. Radio. It's oh so near.